It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Good morning, Citizen Lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It's glad to hear your voice. I know you've been traveling a little bit, and now you're back. And you've come back into a week that has had a lot of meetings and activities and all kinds of things. Have you been able to observe any of those? And where should we start our discussion this week?
I did not get a chance to go to Tuesday's Palmer City Council meeting. I'm assuming that you streamed it. Perhaps you have some insight there. I did get a little news yesterday. There's going to be a change in the council.
Right. And maybe we can start with that. But this was one of those, as I pointed out, busy weeks. There were actually three meetings that happened. The Palmer City Council made a change. They rarely do this. They normally meet on a regular basis, twice a month. But they had decided to have a special meeting instead of their regular meeting, which would normally occur next week on the 8th. In part because the Palmer High School graduation was that night, and there were a number of members of the council that wanted to attend. So they shifted the meeting to the 1st, which is this past Tuesday. But in so doing, they put themselves up against the Borough Assembly meeting, which was happening on its normal basis on Tuesday. So as it turned out, I streamed and recorded the Borough Assembly meeting, and was not in two places at once. Sometimes we're able to do that. We just did not do that this past week. However, I did review the agenda, and I had a conversation with at least one of the council members after the meeting, because the minutes are not yet out. And I will summarize that, because I think there were two items of interest. There's been a long discussion, first of all, about plastic bags. And I would draw listeners' attention to the City of Palmer website. If you go there, you can take a look at not only the agenda, but all of the accompanying materials that were there about any of those agenda items. And when it came to plastic bags, there was a large collection of references people had written and submitted documents, and basically in support of a ban on plastic bags in the City of Palmer. Now, by the way the process works, in this case, that was introduced, and there was a little bit of discussion, but the big-time discussion will be on the 24th, which comes up at the next regular scheduled Palmer City Council meeting. And I expect that there will be a fair number of people that will arrive there, because that's when there will be a public hearing, there will be a discussion, and potentially a vote on that particular issue.
Yeah, the Palmer City Council has had some pretty big meetings this last, you know, the one while I was gone and about the Fred Meyer store, and then this one potentially could too, although I wouldn't expect it'll bring as many people out. Are they going to have it there in City Chambers, or they talk about having it at a bigger...
I'm not aware of any discussion that would move it. I think that meeting that focused primarily on the Fred Meyer building was a record, and I might remind people that both the audio and the video from that meeting are both up on our website. And I was speaking with someone this morning who had actually gone back and had looked at that video and found it very instructive. And so I would just point people in that direction and say, if there's going to be further discussion about Fred Meyer, then it's possible to prepare by looking at what the discussion was previously, and the video helps a lot. But the second topic on this past Tuesday's council meeting was the one that I think in some respects was somewhat surprising to some observers. What was on was a item that would waive the normal process that sits there that if you have someone who's a member of the council, they must wait a year before they take employment with the city. In this case, there had been an ongoing process, and I'm led to believe there were 9 candidates who were reviewed, and one of them happened to be a sitting council member, Brad Hansen, who had applied for a director's job, development director's job, and he was selected, and the council would have to vote for him in order to take that job, would have to vote at least in a supermajority of 5 people. And, of course, he himself is not able to vote on that. In this case, however, the vote was 6-0 in favor of allowing him to take that position. So the result was that he resigned immediately then from the council. And in the next few weeks, there will be an opening that will be made available to people. And this will be an appointment, and the appointment will run until October, when either the person who has been appointed or someone else will stand for election, and that election will select a person to fill out the remaining 2 years of Mr. Hansen's term. So it kind of it's an interesting process. There, some people have looked at that rule of a year as being an important one, whether it's a federal or state level or even locally. I did not understand there was any real discussion about it. A 6-0 vote is pretty big. And I would just say that's the information I have at the present time.
Can you repeat what position he took?
Development director, which I think is the position that Sandra Garley had.
Right, and they've had an interim in there.
Right, David Meneses, who was a building inspector, right.
Mm-hmm. So when they waived it, Mike, was it your understanding that they're waiving a one-time waiver or they're changing their code?
I do not believe they changed the code. I think it was a waiver for this particular case. Mm-hmm. And those are questions. I think there are 3 questions that emerge. One, And we may not have, I think the council members had access to the information regarding the 9 candidates. I'm not sure that is public information, although it maybe after the fact it is. So who are the candidates? Who made the selection? Was this a situation where the needs of the city and the candidate, in this case, Mr. Hansen, were so well matched that you would waive a rule which has a significant role to play in ensuring that people don't go through what is referred to as a revolving door.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know the answers to that. It stands as it was done, and I'm not. And it's possible that that'll be explored a bit just to fill this out. Apparently, the council was confident enough to vote as they did.
Well, will be interesting, Mike. It does present a curious case of optics, I would say, and what message it sends to the community. I know the borough, all the state governments get a lot of scrutiny from members of the public about it being kind of a what they refer to as a good old boys club.
Right.
Mr. Hansen has been on the council for 18 years, I think, last time I counted, with no limits, and has certainly voted actively against term limits each and every time it's come up. And, you know, when they do these little things, it sets precedent. You know, to Mr. Hansen's credit, he has a long history with the borough. Could be argued that he knows a lot about the current planning and zoning issues and about business coming into Palmer. But it also raises some questions about his view of the way Palmer should develop and his stances on resisting some things that may have bettered the community, and not himself at this point being at the table asking for any code changes, which I don't know, might have prevented the big problem they had with the Fred Meyer and the code surrounding that. So there are some questions to be answered, and I would imagine at the end of the day it was the manager that made the decision on who to hire, because they have a paid city manager, and he hires and fires.
Right, right.
Well, I don't know that he would have, unless it was Mr. Hansen asking his fellow assembly members, which at best is awkward, to waive on this. They normally don't. I don't think that the council weighs in on hiring and firing normal employees.
Well, in this particular case, given the selection, it became obvious that the council would have to waive the rule. The other question has to do with the definition of the position. Senator Garley, who had occupied the position, had a long background as a planner. Mm-hmm. and had significant work in other places around the borough, mm-hmm. and out of state, and that was her professional background. And this might signal a change in the way in which that particular department is going, because to my knowledge, Mr. Hansen does not have that same planning background. Right. And there's an interesting discussion that people have of whether the practical knowledge gained over 18 years of service and his other activities in the city would serve both the city well and that particular position well. But I think those are the questions that it'd be worth asking, and we will be having an opportunity with the mayor, with the manager and others to say, okay, how does this selection suggest a continuance or change in how the city works with that particular department?
Yeah, and you know that good point about his tenure on the council. There's also prejudices that come with that, and friends and enemies that come with serving the on a council like that, and it's a completely different position to become a staff member.
Right.
You do have that. The only only case I can even think about as close to that is when Sarah Jensen, who used to work at the City of Palmer, also worked. It was on the assembly, but it was a different body, and there was years between those positions, and then she became staff at the borough, and I think it gave her a very good bird's eye view of city government operations. But Mr. Hansen has strong opinions, and it's way different. It'll be a very different experience to see him approaching the council with his ideas for what it looks to develop the city, as opposed to who may be sitting there, because that changes, and the council already has changed in the last few years, and we have an election now. We will have an appointed person there that is likely, in all likelihood, to run in October. But there are also two other people running in that seat, Mr. LaFrance, who, by all intents and purposes, will run again, and as will Mr. Beth. So
there are three potential. Yeah, there are three seats that'll be up then in October instead of two, and that's that's kind of an interesting thing.
Well, we'll be following that.
Well, let's swing on over to the borough assembly. That meeting was fairly well focused on one topic. I think the takeaway that I would have from that is one particular topic. There was a large contingent of people and a somewhat smaller contingent, a large contingent from Willowa, just outside of Wasilla, and a small contingent from the Butte area. And they were both speaking to a topic which we've discussed and seen worked on for some time, and that's crime. The Willowa people are back. They were back and in force. There were a number of people who spoke. My sense is that the borough is continuing to try to work with people there. The discussion ranged from looking at, for example, the variety of ways in which policing might be improved in that area. And I think that the summary statements that were made were that there were some suggestions regarding the city of Wasilla, regarding the city of Palmer. But when it came on down to it, there was a question of who's going to pay if it isn't going to be a state-level involvement with troopers. And that could likely mean that the people who live in that particular area, if they were to pick up a police service from either of the cities, would see an increase in costs associated with their real estate property. And so there were suggestions regarding more code compliance activity there from the borough, et cetera. I think Mr. Sykes was particularly persistent in that he said basically he wanted to have the discussion continue in a formal way where people on the assembly were looking at these suggestions in more detail, evaluating the costs and factors and so on, rather than putting off a really formal discussion. He got some pushback. It was interesting. It was not, let's establish doing this. The pushback was in kind of the form of saying, well, there doesn't seem to be much support for paying for this. My own feeling was that it came on down to say the state should be doing this. And the one very significant point that was made is that the reaction is if you're living in an area and you pay extra for a police force, but that you have not dealt with the larger issues associated with the criminal justice system, mm-hmm. and that you have clogged courts, you don't have enough prosecutors, et cetera, mm-hmm. This is not going to solve the issue. We will be paying, but we are not going to be able to take care of the problem. Pointing to a number of people that seem to have had a long history of repeated criminal offenses and not being dealt with.
Yeah, it's going to be an ongoing problem. And, you know, we're back to the same basic thing that the state's facing, in that people are pretty used in Alaska to having oil taxes or oil profits from the state part of it, which seems to be getting less and less all the time, pay the bills for everything. And it's very hard for the public to wrap their head around having to pay for anything. So that's a big problem, whether it's on a state level or a local level. You know, there's no easy solutions. The whole crime bill is its own program. So a lot of perfect storms going on here, Mike. And how did they resolve it at the very end? It's an interesting time. They're at budget time right now. In fact, I think the first hearing starts tonight. So if they're going to allot any money, or they could still make it a ballot question, I suppose.
And there was discussion about what items would be placed on the ballot and what was the last date where you could have some discussions about placing things on the budget. I would say that there was no definitive answer provided. And I mentioned earlier that there were people from the Butte that also spoke to the issue, perhaps not as comprehensively as the Willowa contingent, but they were certainly persuasive in pointing out some things that also might be helped with a bit stronger effort from code compliance. And I know that there are people that have been going to these areas and dealing with within the ability of the borough to do it, doing code compliance visits and so on. But there's still a feeling out there that this hasn't had been very effective. But I think the assembly, it would be safe to say, was very receptive. It's obvious that a number of members of the assembly, particularly Mr. Leonard, whose district the Willowa subdivision is in, Mr. Sykes, the Butte, They're interested in not letting this go, but furthering it until you do come up with a solution, and not just saying, "Well, that's big. That's too bad." So we'll see how they play it out. You make a good point regarding having put money where your words are.
Yeah, and if they don't have a real remedy for it, it's even hard to attach any money other than to do a study or something, which everybody is a little tired of. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. You know, the way you get bad behavior out is get good behavior in. Bad behavior is going to go somewhere. I think if you look at a city the size of Anchorage, they continuously, have troubled parts of the city that they're trying to figure out the same thing. So, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And it's interesting also that it's not one area of the borough that this is concentrated on. I can even speak, I don't know that if Mr. Mayfield spoke out, but Big Lake itself has a lot of criminal activity too that brings property values down and costs us all in the end. But it's a very complex and not easily answered question.
So let's shift. We have a few minutes left here to look toward the legislature, which is in its third week after the regular session has sort of finished its 90-day time. They still have a little time left before they must gavel out. And there's been some hint that at least a portion of the solution for using permanent fund monies is almost there. Have you heard anything about any activities that give hope from Juneau?
Yeah, it's hard to have hope right now, Mike. There's still a lot of important bills in the clog. My best information says they'll probably go right to the limit, which I think is the 10th or the 12th or 13th.
Okay.
And now maybe that has changed now with this sort of, it's a very tenuous agreement that they have on the permanent fund. It's an interesting time to do it. I think there's going to be fair to say there's some legislators that wish they would have done this last year, because as soon as they are sprung from Juneau, they're going to be out on the campaign trail. And it is a very, very hard thing to understand. And there's always pushback when it comes to the PFD, and some strong opinions on it, and not a lot of people that understand the math. So they pushed it off till this year, and we'll see how that plays out for them. But there are bills. They're having floor sessions just about daily. AKLedge.com has all of their doings. They don't have to notice at this point. Really more than 24 hours. There are lots and lots of bills, both in the House and the Senate rules. Of course, I've been keeping an eye on, as listeners know, for the last 5 years on a bill this year, SB 63, the smoke-free workplace bill, that's still trapped in rules committee. Sounds like it may get out, but I think that and what they refer to as Aaron's Law are the two ones that everybody's watching to see if they'll be the last little bargaining chip to be thrown on the table. But I don't see, unless they get really stymied here with the restructuring of the PFD draw, that they'll go beyond that mid-May. But who knows? I mean, who thought they would have had as many special sessions as they had last time? But one thing we do know, Mike, is there is an election this year in November, and there are a lot of people, the majority of the legislatures, will be up for re-election. So we'll start all over again in a two-year session next January, and it would seem if we follow the directory of the rest of the country and the national scale, we'll have some new faces down there. In fact, we heard this week, it was well-publicized, that very popular, beloved Dede Johnro is talking about running for a seat, and not saying exactly which seat she would take, either the Senate or the go for the Senate or the House seat in her district. But it's going to be interesting.
Yes, we will indeed. Well, I want to thank you for calling in today, and we look forward to maybe by next week, having more detail about the final solution there in Juneau.
Well, that and the borough, you know, I expect the borough budget to be passed pretty quick this year. I think there's enough people on. They've already had all of their presentations. They've had their public hearings, Mike. And this is not in the past, in years past, you and I know, these things have gone on for days and hours. But I think that this this assembly keeps pretty good tabs on during the budget session. And Mr. Leonard adding him with his accounting background, I kind of expect them to get through these hearings pretty quickly. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on that from afar.
Okay. Well, thank you again for calling in, and we'll talk again next week.
Have a good one.
Yep. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.